Okay, tonight's shiur is the Ilui Nishmas Bela Bas Pinchas, right? Yeah? I apologize. If only I'd known, I would have said it differently. But we get the idea. We could still say that something is shears le'ilu nishmas, and then you can say ad biasagoel afterwards. Okay. The question is, how do you, do you say the neshama should have an aliyah, or do you say whatever? Okay. Anyways, I want to finish off our discussion of Mechila and Pshara tonight, and a little bit of discuss, also if we have a chance, a little bit of Lo Sagrum Mipneish. And then next week we'll start on Ches Samad Aleph with the question of Motzi Shemra and the relationship between Bominus and the Fashas. So the last shir we talked about, again, different indications that Pshara is either a form of Din or an abdication of Din. Either Pshara is rejecting Din for Shalom, or it's a... more flexible, in some respects also more aspirational method of din, and we've been documenting this through numerous issues that come up. One of the issues that we were discussing was the issue of whether there's a requirement of kinyan or not. And in that respect, we talked about three elements in Tosas and how you might provide an alternative to Tosas. Tosas basically says that number one, when the Gemara says that, originally the Gemara says that Shara requires, if you hold, you need 3 dayanim, then you shouldn't require a kinyan. Because once you have the kinyan, what do you need the 3 dayanim for? And Rashi explains that the idea of kinyan is associated with a matana, which in our parlance really translates into the fact that the Shara isn't really a form of din, it's a kind of hischaivus. And once that's true, then you don't need the number that is connected with Dayanim. That's how Rashi explains the Havamina of the Gemara. Then the Gemara's conclusion was, V'hilchasa pshara tzricha kinyan. And Rashi and Tosas both interpret, V'afilu nasis b'shlosha, that the Gemara changed its mind. And the question is, how do we assess that mind change? And what we were suggesting was based on these two possibilities. Either the Gemara has decided that even though it's a matana, and even though the kinyan is... front and center, as if you will, it's still a matana, which is kind of oblique, meaning it's being done by simulating a form of din with dayanim and so on. And as such, you need 3, even though you need a kinyan. And that's certainly the way I think that Tosas understood the sugya. Or, alternatively, that what the Gemara meant in Lamaskana was, don't think just because it's a kinyan that this is a matana, and therefore you shouldn't need 3 dayanim. On the contrary, you need 3 dayanim because really pshara is a form of din. The reason you need kinyan is because since it's not the default of din, therefore in order to make the commitment to it binding, you need a kinyan. These are the two explanations that we pursue. And we were suggesting that there might be at least 3 issues connected to these two perspectives, one of which is Tosas, and the other is the alternative. The 3 are as follows. Number one, will this kinyan only be limited to kinyan sudar, or will it apply to any kinyan that is effective in what ultimately is going to be transferred to another or relinquished into another rishus? In other words, if the din Torah is about karka, can the kinyan be a kinyan chazaka? If the din Torah is about some other metalphalin, maybe it can be the kinyan mos. Or does it have to be kinyan sudar? And the point I was trying to make was that kinyan sudar is a unique kinyan. We saw that in the end of Tosas when we talked about the din of Eidei Kiyum. And basically, the idea is that kinyan sudar doesn't really focus on what you're transferring from one rishus to the other. It's really a way of concretizing the commitment, the agreement. And therefore, it's uniquely suited to things like the type of kinyan that we're talking about in committing to the form of pshara as opposed to the form of din, or a parallel which I mentioned, which is Masa Shomer Chinam Lias Keshoel, the sugya in Bab Metzia, where you have the Torah provides four models of Shomrim, and if you want to in any way tinker or tweak, you know, you want to readjust, reconfigure the Shomrim, so the Gemara says you can do that, but you need a kinyan. So if we interpret that those are real categories that you're reconfiguring, as opposed to simply a hischaivus, you know, bialma matana, despite your real obligation, so the fact that you need kinyan sudar is not a coincidence. And then we talked about sudar's general role a little bit. There's more to say, of course. But so that's nafkamina number one. According to the view that basically pshara tzricha kinyan is because kinyan, pshara is a form of matana, then it shouldn't matter what kinyan you use as long as it's effective in what it is that you are discussing or transferring. On the other hand, if we're dealing with this different notion of accepting the modality, the you know, the root of pshara within din, then certainly it would have to be something like kinyan sutta. That's number one. Number two was the question of when this kinyan is made, right? And that's 2 days in Tosas. And what we were trying to show was, certainly if you take the view that it's a commitment to the process of din rather than to the outcome or transfer of the rights or object themselves, then it would be very sensible to think that this kinyan would take place prior to the details or the outline of the agreement. It would have to take place at the earliest of stages, so that commitment becomes significant. Whereas, if we were taking the view that it's a transfer of the money, the you know, the conclusion, and so on, then it's an open question. We either might say that it makes more sense to have to make the kinyan when the details are known, or what we might say is, no, you can still do it early. It's like signing a blank check, but an effective blank check. You know, so you don't know the amounts, you don't know the details, but the commitment is there. And the reason that the amount is being transferred is because of the check that you signed, which later gets filled in. So the order is not typical. But if, you know, if that's not an impediment legally, then that's what's taking place. That's the second issue, the timing of the kinyan. The third issue is the question of whether or not there's any connection, and this we're going to speak about more in its own right in a couple of minutes, to the topic of mechila tzricha or ein tzricha kinyan. There's a debate in the Rishonim. Most Rishonim of the opinion, based on their reading of many sugyas, that mechila, when you relinquish a right, ain't a tzricha kinyan. You don't need a kinyan for that. We'll discuss why in a couple minutes. We discussed it a little bit last week, but I want to expand on it. Bali Tosas certainly are of that view, that mechila ain't tzricha kinyan. So if that's true, so is there a problem in the fact that pshara, right, oftentimes will be one individual, on a certain level at least, from a certain perspective, being mochel? In other words, if I'm supposed to receive $100 according to the strict din, and the pshara of the pashranim, we'll call them, is that I should only receive $50, right? So basically, the net result is that on $50, I'm being asked to be mochel $50. So do I have to make a kinyan? Why does pshara tzricha kinyan on the part that is, if I have to reach into my pocket and write a check or pull out some cash and pay, that's not mechila. So that should require a kinyan is perfectly understandable. But if I'm giving up the right to receive, to collect $50 or any amount, the amount is irrelevant, that's called mechila. And if mechila and tzricha kinyan, what is pshara on that part, tzricha kinyan? So the Bali Tosas view on that, once again, is that this is a relevant question. It's something that we have to face. The answer is either that the only pshara that's tzricha kinyan is the one that reaches into the pocket and writes a check or pulls out cash, not the one that gives up on the right to collection in Achanami. That's against the Bahag, but that's one view of Tosas. Or if you want to say like the Bahag also says Tosas, so what you need to say is that since in this particular case there's also pressure, typically mechila in tzricha kinyan, because mechila is something which is a result of my own initiative. I'm owed $100 and I decide to let it go, right? To relinquish the claim, to waive my rights. So mechila in tzricha kinyan. But if I'm pressured into it, right, I agree to follow, right, a third party's conclusion. But it's a third party. I might have thought I was going to win the case, or I might have thought that the amount that I'm going to give up, that I'm going to relinquish, you know, is not as big a sum as they came up with. So even though it is mechila, right, and even though it's after the fact that I'm making the kinyan, the fact that there is a pressure, right, to go along with the agreed upon psak or pshara of the dayanim, says Tosas, that makes this a little bit of a different case. It's still the case of mechila, but this particular mechila, tzricha kinyan. Now, my point is that Balei Tosas won't limit to kinyan sudar. They will not necessarily assume that the kinyan is made in the first stage, and also they will conclude that this is a topic relevant to mechila, ein tzricha kinyan, and if there are differences, the differences will be technical within that worldview. But if you take the view that pshara is a form of din, then you're going to be limited to kinyan sudar. You're only going to speak about the kinyan prior to the detail. It's not signing a blank check. It's signing on to pshara. That's a check, right? It's not a check either. But it's, you understand, it's a commitment to a certain process. It's not an effort to transfer or to commit to a certain outcome. Those are two different ideas. And if you ask that group of Rishonim, well, how does this square with the results of Mechila Tzricha or Ein Tzricha Kinyan, I wouldn't say they would laugh at you. That would be too harsh. But I'm guessing that they would say to you, what are you talking about? That has nothing to do with this topic. Mechila Tzricha or Ein Tzricha Kinyan is always about, you know, a dollar figure or an object or a piece of karka or whatever it is. It's always about giving up on, about the claim, a specific claim, a claim of an existing obligation or object. But that's not what this topic is. This whole Tosas doesn't get, most of it doesn't get written if you take that view. So what I wanted to add is one other interesting distinction, a lot of other things that we discussed. We talked about the Riaz, who is of the opinion that there's a difference between the pshara of a baldin, of the balidinim, and the pshara of the dayanim. And we talked about that in general. Is it also possible that there's a difference between coming to court and beginning with din and then switching over to pshara, as opposed to beginning with pshara right away? Does that make any difference? And if so, in which direction does it make a difference? So what's interesting is if you look at the Mordechai, again, I didn't get a chance to do a sheet. I had some technical problems. So I'm going to ask you to bear with me. I have some makoros here, but I'll read them the old-fashioned way today. But Mordechai is something which most people have in the back of their shas. So if you could turn to that, we're going to be discussing a few things there anyway. But if you have it, if you look at Simon Tufresh Ayin Tess, everybody have that in the back? Whoever has the Mordechai? Mordechai is at the very end of the Shas Gemara, for those who have it. And it has Simanim. You'll see the one, it's on Dab Vav Amud Aleph. Everybody have it? Tuf Reish Ayin Tes. What's that? The Hilkos of Pshar Tzricha Kenyan, exactly. Yeah, you have that. You have it. Anybody else have it? Are you the only person who has it?
No, it's on the first page.
Exactly.
Why is it starting to offer a giant test?
What's that?
If the beginning, why is it starting to offer a giant test?
No, because it continues from previous Masachta. It doesn't. They sometimes, you know. Let me see. Wait just one second. Maybe this Gemara has it differently. Was it located or not? Yeah, it starts Tufresh Ayin Hay is the beginning, by the way, of Sanhedrin. So, It's on the first page, on the first column of the Mordechai. Anyways, skip down. So it's a pshar tzrichakin. Listen to that. Rima supa kemakinyam yad kodem shiyomru pashronim. It's the Bali Tosis discussion. Now skip down about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, about 12 or 13 lines. Okay, you'll see, and the last two words of the line are, you'll see Vikasav Ravan?
Yep.
Okay, so this is very interesting. Vikasav Ravan, Dafka Kishahuskaku Mitchila Lipshara Lo Alimilav Kui Mamona Al Korchach Tzricha Kinyan Shalayomer Mishata Hayisi Bachem Mipnei Sheyisim Aftirin Bi. Aber Kishahuskaku Mitchila Ledin Ein Adam Mishata Bebezdin Upsharasam Eina Tzricha Kinyan. So what is he saying? He says if you came to court, right? Oh, by the way, then I'll read one more line. Rabbeinu Yosef Tovelim Cholik B'Tshuvosa V'Kasav D'Shlosha Pashronim Lo Boi Kinyan V'Koshkeinim Adav Nasa B'Maimad Anshe Tovei Ha'ir. So, Rav Yosef Tovelin, the Arzarua, others, the Rama, we saw one view, thinks that when the Gemara says Pshara, Tzri Hilchas of Pshara, Tzri Hakinyan, it's not in the case with our three Dayanim. But anyways, getting back to the Rabban. What does the Rabban say? The Rabban says there's a difference if you go to court and you begin the Din Torah, and then you decide on the suggestion of the Dayanim, whatever the case may be, after the case has started as a regular din, you say, you know what, I want to switch, the two Bali dinim agree to switch over to Pshara. But it's already in the framework of din. But if you start off the Din Torah already with Pshara, then you need a Kinyan. Now the way that the Ravan says it, it's an interesting distinction. Avu kashuhuskaku b'tchila l'din, ein adam mishata b'bezdin, upsharasam ein atzricha kinyan. So what's fascinating is this is a tshuva of the Maram Rotenberg. I'm sorry, this is a tshuva of the Ravan. Saying it wrong. And it's quoted in a number of places, including in the Tshuvos Maimunios. You know, everybody's familiar that in the Rambam there's the Hagos Maimunios, right? In the back of each sefer, there is also Tshuvos Maimunios, which is basically both the Hagos Maimunios, Tshuvos Maimunios. These are the Talmidim of the Maram Rotenberg, who wrote, who wrote footnotes, if you will, on the Rambam, to kind of not update it, but to juxtapose. You know, to connect the psakim of Ashkenaz to the Rambam's work. That, which is kind of what the Smag, also, I mean, the Smag basically is one of the Bali Tosis, Rav Moshe Mikutzi. He kind of merged, you know, the worldview of the, you know, the Rambam, you know, and the Bali Tosis. So in a way, the work, Hagos Maimunios and Tshuvos Maimunios, are a way of, bringing in the Torah of Maram Rotenberg, of Ashkenaz, you know, for those who are reading the Rambam to see, what do they say in Ashkenaz? Anyways, in the Tshuvos Maimunios, when they quote this Ravan, they drop the line or these few words about Mishat and Ibach.
Exactly.
It says the words that we have are Al Korchach Tzricha Kinyan, Shalayomar Mishata Hayisi Bachem, Mibnei Shayisa Maftirim Bi, Avakashahuskaku, Mitchila Ledin, Einada Mishata Bebezdin. Upsharasam enam tzrichim kinyan. So let me explain. In the way that the Mordechai has it, and some of the others, it sounds like this distinction is lahalacha is very important, right? But it's a pragmatic distinction at the end of the day. Meaning, if you go to court, right, and right away you go into pshara, so we're concerned without a kinyan that you'll say, Mishata Aniba, I didn't really mean, I wasn't serious, or I thought it would turn out a certain, kind of an asmachta. In other words, I thought it would turn out a certain way, but I wasn't really fully committed, notwithstanding the consequences. However, if you start off with Din, that's always deadly serious. There's no such thing as Mishata Anibach in the framework of Din. So even though you switch to Pshara, right? That level of intensity, of seriousness, is something which prevails and which precludes you from trying to, you know, slither away from your commitment. And therefore, lemaisa, says the Rabban, an important distinction, just like some people say, kinyan is required, you know, without three pashranim. You have three pashranim, you don't need a kinyan. So the Rabban is saying, kinyan is required when you start with pshara. But when you start in the framework of din and you switch to pshara, then it's more serious and you don't require kinyan. However, in the Tshuvas Maimonides' version, this whole discussion of Mishat HaNibach is left out. And the impression that you get is that this version of the Rabban is a fundamental one, and it goes to the heart of our issue. Namely, when you start off with Pshara, so maybe we look at it the same way that the Riaz looks at the Pshara of Balei Dinim. Namely, as a din and shalom. And therefore, you need a kinyan, because it's outcome-oriented, and it is peace-oriented, and therefore, it's like a matana. It may, you know, take a different simulated form, but in the end of the day, conceptually, it's about your hischaibus and matana. However, if you go to court and you begin a din Torah within the framework of din, and then the dayanim persuade you, you know what, we're going to switch to pshara, so that's not a pshara case. That becomes pshara deciding the din. And therefore, it's treated as a form of din. Now, what's fascinating is that the Yom Shel Shlomo, Torah quotes the Yom Shel Shlomo, who says exactly the opposite. In fact, but perhaps for the same reasoning. So I'm just going to read you the line so you'll see I'm not making it up. I really should never say that because then if I bring the wrong page, you'll think I did make it up. Just one second. No, I don't have it. Okay, the Yom Shel Shlomo, quoted by the Bach in Siman Yud Beis, says exactly the opposite. You'll have to look it up. Meaning, he says, if you come to court and you start a din Torah, and then the dayanim convince you to switch from din to pshara, then you need a kinyan. But if you begin with pshara, then you don't need a kinyan. Now again, I think that could be explained in two ways. You know, one is that, it's the switching from one system to another that requires the kinyan. It's not per se, like what we were discussing a little bit. In other words, as long as you don't have the juxtaposition, you might say, well, there's din, there's pshara. Pshara is a form of din. If you accept din to begin with, that's not a new commitment or a different commitment. It's only a different commitment and viewed as one which therefore requires the fortification of a kinyan, right? When that contrast, you know, is staring you in the face. So if you begin with din and then you're switching to pshara, you know, that requires kinyan. Otherwise, it's just perfectly natural that you're doing a pshara din rather than din. I think that's one way of looking at the Yom Shel Shlomo. The other way is to take it more in terms of the distinction that we made in the Rabban and the Tshuvas Maimonides, but in the opposite application. Meaning, if you come right to din and then you switch to pshara, so in contrast to din, it sounds like, you know, we started with din and now we've decided we're going to go the shalom route, you know, instead. And therefore, you need a kinyan because it's outcome oriented. However, if you go to court and you ask, and the dayanim and you both agree to begin with to file this as pshara, right? Then that is not, that's viewed as pshara as a form of din merosh, and therefore that doesn't require kinyan. So I think either of these explanations would work. It's just fascinating that for a parallel reason you'd get two opposite conclusions: the Yom Shel Shlomo and this, I guess, more conceptually pure form of the Rabban. Okay. So that's what I wanted to mention, just in terms of the other things that we discussed, in terms of the nature of pshar. Now, I'd like to discuss a little bit the problem of mechila tzricha or ein tzricha. Okay. So the idea of Mechila Tzricha Ein Tzricha Kinyan, we started to discuss it last time. What's different about Mechila? I'm not talking about Pshar anymore. Right? I'm talking about real Mechila. Okay. So typically, in order to change title, right, and transfer title, ownership, you need a Kinyan. Why wouldn't you need a Kinyan in the case of Mechila? So I think that there are, roughly speaking, four ways, too broadly, but let's say four ways to explain this.
Is Mechila always orally?
I'm sorry, is it always?
Orally.
Mean you're asking, do you need a shtar? Well, if you don't need...
If I say to you, I'm okay with your debt, that's...
Yeah. Well, you only need the Eidim and Dine Mamanus, as we know, Labor Sadi al Shakri, if there's going to be a challenge. The one exception to that, as we know, we discussed last week, might be Kinyan Sudar. But otherwise, Mechila doesn't require a the presence of Eidim. We're even debating whether it requires a Kenya. Because typically it does. If I want to give you a Matana, all things being equal, then certainly a Matana that I have in my... If I want to give you my watch, which is my possession now, and I want to commit to giving it to you, I want you to acquire it from me b'matana or b'mecher, then you have to make a kinyan. But if you owe me $100 and I decided to waive the debt, the issue that we're discussing is whether or not my my verbal agreement to do that, even without a mode of kinyan, right, is sufficient. Yeah, you certainly don't need aid, that's for sure. Question is, do you need a kinyan? So, why wouldn't you? Oh. So, one perspective is that you really do, but you have a kind of, you know, invisible kinyan taking place here. Okay? So, lemaisa mechila in tzricha kinyan, but that's because tamid, the mechila, yesh kinyan. Right? What is the kinyan? There are different versions of this, and it might be that there are different cases of it. Sometimes, if the object is already in my possession, which typically is what we're talking about in Mechila, but then it might expand Mechila also. In other words, even if we're not talking about the Mechila of a prerogative or a right, but the Mechila of a Be'en, if the Be'en is already in your Rishus, right, so maybe there's a Kinyan Chatzer. In some cases, maybe Mechila is Ki'ilu Hiskabalti, in the case of money, something that we find that some Rishonim say. The Itur, I'll read it to you in a couple of minutes, has a line where he says about Mechila in Tzricha Kinyan because, you know, Ein Lecha Meshicha Gedol Lemizu, right? Which is his way of saying, well, it's already in the other person's possession, so, and now it's there, you know, without opposition. So instead of saying that's Chatzar, he's calling it Meshicha. Okay, but that perspective basically says that Mechila does require a Kinyan, but it always has a Kinyan, by virtue of the structural reality that the object, right, is either kilus kabalti or really is in the possession already of the you know, would-be new title holder. Okay? So that is one perspective, and we find the language of Piraon is something that the Tur uses in Siminayin Gimel Sivkat and Lamed Beis. The Prisha uses the language of Chatzer. I mentioned that the Bala Itur uses the language of Meshicha. Beis Yosef in Siman Reish Mem Aleph also uses the language of Meshicha, and so on. Okay, so that's one possibility. The second possibility is something that we find also in some of the Achronim in particular, and that is that the reason that there's no requirement of Kinyan and Mechila is because there's no need for a physical transfer. That's different from what I said a couple of minutes ago. What I said a couple of minutes ago was the fact that there's no need for an additional physical transfer allows you to perceive the agreement, right, as one which also accompanies a kind of invisible kinyan. What I'm saying now is something else. What I'm saying is you don't need a kinyan. You don't need a maisa kinyan at all to create a chalos kinyan in Mechila, in the case of Mechila. And the reason that is because there's no shiur, shin, yud, ve, vav, resh. There's no remnant, there's nothing, there are no loose ends. There's nothing that needs physically or legally transferring. or I should really say physically transferring. And maybe what requires kinyanim generally is that change in the venue of the object. Now, how far you'll push this in terms of a be'en, let's say a pikadon that happens to be, what do we say about a pikadon that is in the rishus of the would-be recipient of this mechila?
But you're talking about tawful and omni.
Not necessarily. Why am I talking about metalflin only?
Because in karka would think necessarily.
Well, karka. This question in general, whether mechila refers only to rights and prerogatives, or even to be'ens, and if so, only pikadon or even other be'ens, and what about karka? There's a question whether or not mechila applies to be'ens and to karka. But let's assume for the moment that it could. Let's say somebody was, in my karka, or I was allowing him to, the Gemara in Cheskes Avatim seems to talk about the possibility of mechila in karka. Before the Gemara came to its ultimate conclusion about the reason why 3 years, are required for Cheskes Gimel Shanim in a case of a dispute. So at one point, then before the Gemara came to its final conclusion, the Gemara said, well, maybe it's a kind of mechila. Right? So that's one of the sources that's quoted in the discussion, whether or not, mechila can apply to karka. So maybe it can. Again, there's no need, you don't pick up the karka, you don't put it in his pocket, you don't transfer it, you're transferring the title. So what I'm saying is, maybe the reason the mechila in Tzricha Kinyan is that you really don't need a kinyan, not that there is an invisible kinyan, but the reason you don't need it is because kinyanim are required when there's a physical change, there's a need to physically change the location, right, the legal location of the object. And here, that's not necessary, as long as the objections, right, to new ownership are not forthcoming. That's the second possibility. The third possibility is that the need for kinyanim in general is connected, this is a huge topic, is connected, just to contrast it to what we just said, not to the transfer of a physical location of the object and so on, which symbolizes a new legal title of the object, but is connected to the concept of smichus das, meaning how serious am I about this transaction? So just verbalizing it or agreeing to it per se mostly is not sufficient. It's not enough das or smichus das. Right? It's very easy to agree to something. It's very easy to talk about it. When you actually objectify it concretely by making a ma'aseh kinyan, right, that kind of concretizes your das. That's called smichus das. So some of the mefarshim say, mechila ain't tzricha kinyan because you're relinquishing a right. And as such, there's a certain inherent added seriousness to what you're doing because, you're giving up something. And as such, it's an immediate kind of a thing because it's not something which is mechusar maisa or gevina, right? I'm owed $100. I've waived the right of collection, right? So not only is there no shior, there's nothing else to be done, there's no physical transfer needed, but in addition to that, there's a certain inherent seriousness giving that up. And there's nothing more after that. You can't say, until he actually, walks over and puts it in the other guy's rishus, there's nothing, outstanding here. So that's a third explanation, resting on the idea that smichus das plays an important role generally in kinyanim. We're going to say that mechila ain't tzricha kinyan. However, there's a fourth view. The fourth view is really the one that is most different, let's say, and really based on a different perspective. And that is that typically and classically, and this would, again, these are some of the nafkaminas as we're going along, when we speak about mechila, we're speaking, as I say, about waiving a right. We're not talking about transferring money or an object. And the idea is that qualitatively, it's a different experience. It's a different, a right and a prerogative is treated differently than a commodity, than an object. objects require kinyanim. Rights, prerogatives, do not. So let me highlight this by mentioning the following interesting issue also. We have a rule in halacha, right? Ein adam makne davar shelo balio. Right? If something doesn't exist, or it's not in your domain, right, you can't transact with it. Right? Again, that's a discussion. There are all sorts of interesting examples of this, and chilukim that are made, but, there's a difference between, dekel peirosav and peiros dekel, and things that are completely unpredictable. As if I want to sell next year's crop, that's one kind of a davar shelo balei. If I want to sell the tree, with respect to its crop, that's quite a different question, too, right? If I want to sell, the watch that I'm going to buy tomorrow from someone else, but it's not yet in my possession, or the watch or the whatever that I'm going to make tomorrow, but doesn't yet exist in the world, right? Or whatever. That's called the davar shelo balei olam. Davar shenu b'rishusa, davar shenu balei olam, etc. And we paskin, it's a machlokas on the Gemara, but we paskin, in a namak to davar shelo balei olam. Okay. What about mechilas davar shelo balei olam? Right, so that's an interesting question. It seems like there might be a machlokas about that. The reason I say it seems is because, when there are more than one variable in legal discussion, it's always harder to pin things down. So I'll just give you an example. The Gemara in Bavasud of Kuf Chavav Medbeis discusses whether a Bechor can waive his rights to a double portion, right? And can a Pashut, waive his rights to his portion, right? So the Gemara there on Kuf Chavav Medbeis seems to say that you cannot do that. But there are two girsos in the Gemara. And it seems to be that it's the Rashbam and the Rashban, they really seem to argue about it. One is, the way the Rashbam reads the Gemara is, that we just don't take it seriously. In other words, when a Bechor says, Bechaye Aviv, talking about, the father, the Morish, is still alive, I'm giving up my double portion. Right? We just don't believe it. We don't give it the credibility that would be necessary. That's how the Rashbam reads the Gemara. Right? Hasam lo kamachil. Gemara contrasts it to a person who says, who gives up some other right, ona, let's say. So the Gemara says, or sherksus viona. So the Gemara says, in the case of the Bakar, lo kamachil. And Rashbam explains, the father's still alive. Either he's grandstanding or he thinks he means it, but he doesn't really mean it. It's not concrete enough for us to take it seriously enough. We don't consider it to be a credible mechila. However, one more second. The Rashba doesn't have the girsa hasam lo kamachil. He has a different girsa. He's something like lo matzi machil. And he says the problem is it's a davar shelo balei olam. You can't be mochel something which doesn't yet exist. Now, there is a little bit of a complication. And we have a similar argument in Sugin Ksuvis about Baal and Ishto in Yerusha. There's a similar discussion, since we were discussing Knossos a lot this year, in the Yerushalmi in Masechet Ksuvos. Can a person be mochel, let's say I'm a nignav, somebody stole my object, right? Can I be mochel on the kefel before the Gemar Din? Right? Because of the Gemar, before the Gemar Din, there's no real chiv to pay the kefel. So you can take him to court. Says, by the way, I just want everybody to know, I'm interested in getting my Karen back. I have no interest in the kefal. I'm mochel on the kefal. Can you do that or not? The problem with all these cases is that you need also to assess, there are two things to assess. Is the nature of this really a lo balei olam, for example, Yerusha? Is there a shame yoresh b'chaye ha'av? Are there Yerusha rights already? Are you like the designated, the heir designate? All of a sudden they discovered like a new term, in politics, like, you know, the presumptive candidate. Right? I don't remember any other election they ever called them, spoke about presumptive. Here they can't get the words out of their mouths, so that he's the candidate. He won, you know, he won the primaries.
This is a new term.
Right? Am I right? I never heard it before. I use the term presumption, presumptive all the time. I never recall it ever being used in the context of political campaigns. So it's, you know, are there, you know, is there a presumptive heir? Is there such a chalos? And does the presumptive heir have theoretical or abstract, you know, rights? Is he like Omed Lirusha? Or no, you know, it's all just absolutely lo bali olam until the unhappy moment, you know, when the Morish is no longer alive. And at that point, there's Yerusha. So part of the question is, how lo bali olam is this? Or in the case of a Knas, as we discussed. Before Hamad HaBedin, we don't implement Knasos, that's true. But is that because even in theory there is no Chiyuv? The Chiyuv is generated by Bezdin. That's a Machlokas. But the bigger point I want to make, and then I'll take a question, is that everybody agrees on an amakta davashul bali olam, right? Is there? It sounds like there might be those who think that's true, but on a mochel davashul bali, what's the difference? But if we take the view that a right or a prerogative, the right to collect $100, right, or to pursue a certain case. Right, is different than the way that we treat the acquisition of or the transfer of objects or concrete items, then that's a parallel to what we're discussing. Mechila in Tricha Kenyan and Mechila works with Amash. I'm not saying they have to be connected, I'm saying that they might be parallel. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, two things. One thing, Yaakov Avinu certainly didn't agree that it was something shalom bala olam.
Right, so that's a big discussion there. The Mefarshim speak about it. There's a tshuva of the Rivash about that. You know, why is the story of Yaakov and Esav not a not an issue, or how does it connect to the problem of mechilas davar shalom bala olam? I said tshuva of Rivash, and you know the Mefarshim al Atar. You know, speak about it. It's a very popular topic, you know, on that. As you know, there are some people, including Chazal, that Rashi quote, who say that Yaakov, anyways, was the real, he was the real Bechor, right? And he was kind of just redressing, the wrong impression that Esav was the Bechor, you know, to begin with. There's a lot to say, but it's a good question. People discuss it very extensively.
The other point I would think is, you can say ain't no the matne davar shelo bala olam, because
can or can't.
Yes, you can say that because that refers to a concrete object.
Right.
But the mechila is itself a cause of action. It's not an object.
Right. So you're defending the view that we should make this distinction.
Yeah.
But you could also certainly understand the other view. The other view will say that anything that's lo bali olam is not transactable, even if it is a different kind of transaction. It's still not transactable. It'll say that the flaw of dealing with something which, you know, is a future, basically, extends. It, in other words, the argument when you say that Einad Amochel, that's why I say it's a little complicated. When you say Einad Amochel Dav Shal Bala Olam, you could be saying one of two things. You could be saying because Mechila isn't really fundamentally different than any other Hakna, legally. What you're saying is, but it seems that it is. What I'm saying is you also might say it is different, V'Afal Pichein, because the flaw in legally dealing with futures is such a deep flaw, right, that despite the difference, it still obtains and it still prevails. But I'm in agreement with you. I think it makes it much more palatable, for sure. Yeah.
So do you create an assignment of a claim differently than a mechila of a claim? Let's say you want to assign your claim.
You mean you want to sell your claim?
You want to sell your claim.
So that is a very interesting question, We'll get that in just a minute. It is different. The question is, can you sell a claim? So if you want to, I mean, that's a very, very massive halakhic topic. There, if you want to know, just like, you know, 5 seconds on it, most of the Rishonim, the opinion that Mechiras Chovos, is only Drabanan. That's the psak of most Bali Tosis and the Rambam. There are two exceptions that I'm aware of, and that the, you know, in the Rishonim, and they're spoken about in the Achronim too. One is the Raivid, and the other is Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is a very, very famous shita, not printed in our Bali Tosis on the Daf, but quoted by other Rishonim. It's a very rare phenomenon, but it's for, especially for such a well-known doctrine. Rabbeinu Tam made a distinction, it's going to be relevant to us a little bit later, between what we call Shibud HaGuf and Shibud Nechasim. Rabbeinu Tam said, you can't sell the Shibud HaGuf. Shibud HaGuf is a personal indebtedness. You gave me money, I owe you. That's not transferable. But, and we'll discuss this in a minute, if there are Shibudim, if it triggers a lien on the property, so that I can sell. That's like a right to collect. So Rabbeinu Tam said, what was the problem? Shmuel, the Gemara in many places in Shas quotes the din of Shmuel. Shmuel said that, you know, Amocher Shtachov L'Chaveiro, right? If you sell the right to collect, right? Which you just called assigning the loan, right? The Chazro Umachlo, and then you turn around, the Malve who sold it, that is Reuven is owed money by Shimon. Shimon has to pay Reuven. Reuven sold his rights to collect from Shimon to Levi. Right? In American law and other cultures, you can do that. Right? You're not going to get the same value. We've talked about this still in the past. If Shimon owes Reuven $100, he's not going to get $100 from Levi when he sells him the right to collect. Right? He's going to get, depending on the, you know, success rate out there, we've talked about this in the past, you know, he's going to get $80 or he's going to get $20. Or he's going to get $50, you know, right? Because it's not worth it. Obviously, Levi doesn't need to buy the right to collect from, you know, from Shimon for the face value, you know. Anyways, whatever it is, that's why in Garmi, this becomes a big question. But this is the rule. Reuven took the money that was owed to him, or took that debt, he sold it to Levi. Right? And then he turned around, Reuven, and he was mochel to Shimon. He said, no, you don't have to pay. Right? So the din is machol, it works. And if there's a din of garmi, which most of Shonim think that there is, meaning how could you do that to poor Levi, right? So how much is it going to be? That's the question. Is the amount that Levi is entitled to, you know, the amount in the shtar that he could have collected, or the value of on the marketplace of such instruments, assigned debts or whatever they're really called, right? That's an interesting question. The question is, how could Shmuel, how could Reuven do that if he sold it and the other person can collect and it was a valid sale? How can Reuven turn around and be mochel the debt?
He can't.
So that's why. What do you mean he can't?
Well, he
Shmuel said he can.
He no longer has that.
That's the question, but he can. That's the question.
Standing to do that.
But that's the question.
That's the question. So I'm going to tell you what the two most famous answers are. So most Rishonim, because of that, most Rishonim fundamentally agree with you. Because of that, they say the din of Mechiras Chovos is only Drabana. It's a din Drabana. It doesn't work in the Torah. And therefore, once there's Mechila, that goes back on the Torah law. If he doesn't know it, he doesn't know it. That's the Doraisa. That's how they explain it. Rabbeinu Tam came up with this brilliant idea, very big yesod. Rabbeinu Tam said, no. Mechiras Chovos is Doraisa. So how can he turn around and be mochel? He said, because there are two aspects of a loan. One is the personal indebtedness, and the other is the objective safeguards, the lien, the mortgage, right? The property what's the property?
Encumbers.
Exactly, that's the word I was looking for. Thank you. The property that it encumbers as a lien. So what you've sold is the lien part, the encumbrance part. But you can't sell the personal indebtedness because that's personal. It's not transferable. When he's mochel, what he does is, he said there's no longer shibud aguf. There's no longer, if there's no personal indebtedness, then there's no encumbrance to the personal indebtedness. So mimela, he undermines, and that's why there's garmin. Right? But it is a mechila. Okay. Why am I telling you this? Because you asked. It's also very relevant to something which we're going to speak about in just one more minute in this, exactly this this issue in this case. But yeah.
The idea that mechila requires a kinyan.
Yeah.
Is that an old
kinyan? Requires or doesn't require?
Does.
Does not.
Does not require.
Yeah, that's how we pass.
Is that an old connected to the idea that if a malva wants to be mekadesh a kinyan of a pre-existing loan by forgiving the loan, he can't go ahead and do it?
So that is...
There's a connection between these two concepts.
It's very much possibly very connected. We'll leave it at that. Right. I might learn Kiddushin Exodus, so the Kaddish Milva is an important topic there. But absolutely, because the concreteness of a milva is really kind of the common denominator in all these cases. What you're asking, what you were asking, and what we're talking about in Mechila Tzricha Rein Tzricha Kinyan. Do we look at collection of a debt? Is debt basically a series of commitments? Or is there something... In quotation marks, is there like an outstanding debt? Is debt like an invisible commodity, right? So that's exactly the underlying bigger meta halachic, let's say, question. So 100%, and hopefully we'll get a chance. Anyways, so my point is as follows: this fourth view basically says bechilah tricha kinyan, as you were saying before, because it isn't an item, it isn't an object, it isn't money, it isn't a value. It may be worth something, but it's really a prerogative, right? And for the same reason why some people might think that while ein ana makna davar bali olam, ana mochel davar bali olam, so too it's very possible that mechila ain't tzricha kinyan, because it's just a different kind of an animal. It's a different kind of a transaction. Oh. Now, l'may nafka mina, and let's talk about a couple of cases, and you'll see even some things that we discussed. But see,
I just wondered how this fits in with a woman selling her ksuva, the future claims.
It's the same. Well, a woman selling her ksuva claim, all things being equal, you might be mechalek between the milva of a ksuva. The milva of a ksuva is a little bit different than a regular milva in that it was never triggered, by matan mos. So it's both more and less. That goes under the rubric that we talked about a little bit last year, the beginning of last year. Lo nitna ksuva ligavos michayim. So on the one hand, Reb Chaim, I always like to quote it, Reb Chaim has a terrific formulation in the stencils, in the Kiddushei Gracha L'Shas, where he says, a ksuva is a chiyuv lehitchayev. It's not really a chov, because there's no quid pro quo. Typically a chov is the response to matan mos, to receiving, I got something, and now I have to return something. In the case of a ksuva, where's the quid pro quo? Now the Rambam sees it as some sort of pitsuyim, the Rambam Nordvuchim, and a little bit the Ramban, when he talks about Motzi Shemra, maybe we'll talk about that when we get to Motzi Shemra, but it's certainly not obvious that way.
But she is considered a balas chov, ugame, ligovim, chasim shubadi.
Right. So it might be better, it might be stronger, it might be weaker, but it's a little bit different than a typical chol.
And why is that now a davar shabali olam?
Why is it a davar shabali olam?
Because she might.
Oh, I see. Because you mean she? It's not a real. It's a
right.
Again, but the point is that the ksuva is something. Again, there's a market. There's the sugya makos too. There's a market for the actuarial, possibility of this ksuva. Right?
If you have a futures market, then it's not considered low.
Maybe that's the idea. Okay, so let me talk about a couple of things here quickly. And number one, so if you look at the Mordechai here in the back, I hope you're still up at the Mordechai. The Mordechai addresses two interesting questions. On column 2. Column 2, you see the whole, there's a big piece on the right side there.
What are we looking at? I'm sorry.
The Mordechai.
What Siman?
Now we're in Siman Tuf Reish Pei. And in a second, I'm going to get to Tuf Reish Pei Aleph as well. I want to talk about two cases quickly. You see where you have the Haggah? Right below, right below it. Aval Mechila below Bezin Zimnin by Kinyan. Everybody have that? The Zimnin on the second column. The Zimnin by Kinyan, who Nechlak Lebes Drachin. Im Machal Chov Lechavero, Sheesh Olav, Hain Bishtar, Hain Balpeh, Midaito, below Pashronim, Kono. Ho Vachov Biad Alevi, Zacha Bamesha Biado, Kaosa Shoshanino Bershus Lokeach, Kivin Shekibel Olav, Mocher, Kono Lokeach. The chain with the shmuel, damar shmuel, the mocher shachov lechavero, because of machlo, machal. V'ho mechila below shum kinyan. Skip down two lines. Elavadai hoi mechila below kinyan. V'tam emai, mishum domrinan, ra, dok, v'chuj b'nei v'lo pash l'gabe v'lo midi, v'hava ki'ilu hoda she'enu chai v'lo klum. Then he says, v'kol shekein, dim lo mochro la'acher d'motzi machel. What's that next word? Ode. The ilav hachi matzi amal the pashronim mishate hayisi bachem. Okay. The first thing that the Mordechai, this is Rambam Tshuva Melam Rotenberg, says is that every milva, right, mechila of any milva works ein tzricha kinya. Because it sounds like he's saying, because it's smichus das, you're serious about it, there's no shiur, it's hard to know which one. But one thing he says is, it doesn't matter whether there's an outstanding shtar or not. It doesn't matter whether it's a milva pa or a milva b'shtar. Correct? And then he brings a proof. He says, after all, from Shmuel, right? The Shmuel that we just discussed a minute ago, which is, if mocher adam, right, es chov, and then chazar machal, if Reuven sells Levi the debt that Shimon owes him, and then Reuven turns around and is mochel, right? The rule is, the mechila is chal. Even though right now, right, he sold it to a third party, he can still be mochel, and there's no kinyan there. Says the Mordechai, kol shekein, right, if he didn't sell it, and it was just between Reuven and Shimon, and he just said, Shimon, get a good night's sleep. You no longer owe me $1 million. Right? A mochel. That would certainly work, says the Marm Rotenberg, the Mordechai. Correct? Okay. So the Tur quotes Rabbeinu Yeshaya, who disagrees. Tur says in the name of Rabbeinu Yeshaya, if you have a milva b'shtar, if you have a milva al peh, mechila in tzricha kinyan. But if you have a milva b'shtar, if you have a contract, if the Malva is holding a contract, in that situation, the rule is that Tricha Kinyan. That's Rabbeinu Yeshaya. Okay. So fascinating, there are like two or three different explanations that are given for Rabbeinu Yeshaya. Okay? One is, in the Pesachei Tshuva, they quote a bunch of Achronim, Smichus Das. If the reason that Mechila normally is Ein Tzricha Kinyan is because, since it's the final word, and you don't need anything else, you don't need to do a physical transfer of any kind, so it's, and it's inherently, you're giving up a right, right? A serious right. Somebody owes you, you're willing to give up on something that they, to give them a present, you say, I'm going to give you a present. But to give up on a right that somebody owes you money, that's very inherently serious. It's not a smichus das problem. You don't need a kinyan. But when the Malva is holding on to a shtar, right, and he didn't rip up that shtar, right, that's why we say that normally when a loveh says about a loan that he paid it back, the loveh Shimon says, I paid him back yesterday. I know what he wants from me. What do we say? We believe him. Namun lama paraiti. But if there's a shtar, we say shtar chaviyadi, my boy. So if he, you know, is still holding on to the shtar, that's a different story. That's one explanation of Rabbeinu Yeshaya. A second explanation of Rabbeinu Yeshaya would be if we took the view that why do you normally need a kinyan? Not smichus tas. Because there's a physical transfer. And per se, the physical transfer requires a kinyan. But lo yitzur, everything is where it needs to end up, and you don't need to physically transfer anything. That would be fine. Right? So, what if there is a shiur, shin yud vav, or there's something that's missing? There's still a shtar out there? Right? It's not a neat, elegant, you know, outstanding, you know, issues. Transaction. Right? There are still unresolved remnants of this initial transaction. That's a different story. Right? The Bach interpreted Rabbeinu Yeshaya differently. He said the following. The difference between Milva Pem, Milva Bishtar, it's not the Shior, I mean Shinyud Vavresh, and it's not the Smichus Das. What it is something totally different, and that is the shibudim. Typically, why does mechila work? Because you're mochel in a prerogative. You're waving away, right, a right to collect. But, let's say there is a tangible, concrete aspect. Let's say there are kinyanim, there are other be'ens involved here. When I have a milva bishtar, a milva with a contract, the difference is that I can collect, he owes me money, but in addition to that, I own, quasi-own, let's say, right, his real estate. Right? So doesn't that have to be transferred back to him? If you look at the real estate as kind of an arvus, you know, the Gemara says, nichsid bar inush, inun, Achroin varvoin zelazet, Gemara in the end of Masechet Bava Basra. And it's what we call a down the road, you know, kind of a thing if you need it. It's one thing. But the very famous formulation of the Ritva in Masechet Kiddushin, Ritva in Kiddushin, David Gilmo says that a shibudim are like chatzi kinyan. In other words, the lien, he owns it more than I own it because I haven't collected it yet. But it is, you know, I have like a stake in this property. So, if that's the case, it's not just the, in the case of Vilvalpeh, I'm really waiving my prerogative, my right to collect. But here, I'd have to also be waiving my quasi-ownership of his real estate, which is lien to my repayment. Rabbeinu Shemaya says, I'm sorry, Rabbeinu Yeshaya says, according to the tour, that is not subject to mechila. So what's the difference? So the Achronim discuss interesting cases. I'll just give you one. Ksav Yad. Right, sometimes you don't have a contract in a loan, but you have a, you know, a personal acknowledgement, you know, in writing, by the Mishai, by the Lova. The Lova writes you, you know, a document that he, you know, that he owes money. And that's called a Ksav Yad, right? It's not as good as a contract with two Edim. What's the difference between a Ksav Yad and a Shtar? Ah, well, there's a huge debate. This is not the time to discuss it. We have discussed it in the past, in Bava Basra days, as I recall, for everybody who was here, whoever was here. There's a huge debate among the Rishonim, the Rif and the Rambam, against the Balei Tosfos and the Ramban, the Balamor. I'm sorry, the Ramban is with the Rambam and the Rif. I may have said it wrong. Balamor is with the Balei Tosfos and Rashi and the Rashbam. And that is about Shtar Chavyoni, my boy. And then I want us to say Pira. If I'm a Malva and I don't have a Shtar, but I have the Ksav Yad of the Lova in my hands, can he say I paid you? Or can I say, Ksav Yadcha Biyadi, my boy? How come you didn't demand either a shovar, which is a receipt, or demand that I rip up the evidence? That's a debate. But what's not a debate, what's clear in the Mishnah on the very end of the Sakha Bav Masra, Kufayin Hey, and the Gemara Kufayin Bav, almost the end of Bav Masra, that's where it ends, is that Ksav Yad does not trigger Nechasa Meshuvadim. There's no lien on the property. There is a remnant, and especially if there's a Shtar Chabyadi, my boy, aspect, then there would be an important remnant, right? Smichus Das, they're very questionable, but there are no Nechasa Meshuvadim in Ksav Yad.
Because of lack of aid.
Let's say yes. For the moment. I mean, why is Ksav Yad in general doesn't have? Yeah, okay. Let's say that the Eidei Chasima would be a Shtar Kinyan on the Shibudim, even if they're a Shtar Raya on the Milva. By which I mean, you know, their role in establishing that the loan took place is one of Birur. Right? It's just, you know, to make sure that everybody's being honest. But with regard to the Shibudim, it's possible that their role is that they create a Kinyan Shibud. It's like a Kinyan. Like a Shtar Kinyan. Just like a Shtar is used to acquire property, a Shtar can be used to acquire a quasi ownership or a lien on property. Yeah. So that's the story of Rabbeinu Yeshaya, and there's of course much more to say. But if you go on in the Mordechai.
Have anything to do with Shibud Yoraisa or Shibud Rabbanim?
A lot.
On this discussion?
Yeah. Is it enough if I just say a lot? No, it really does. It's a good question. Again, just very, 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 very bekitzur. You know, this is a question that the Bali Tosis ask all over the place. In the beginning of Bav Metzia, that's where most people know it from, but also in Shavuos and Iksuvos. The Gemara says in a bunch of places, for example, Ein Nishbaim al Kfira Shibud Karkos. And the Gemara says that in the case of a milva b'shtar. Whenever you have a din Torah about a milva b'shtar, you know that you have a loan and you have a contract. So the Gemara says, well, you can't take oaths. You can't take a shul in that case. Because since there are some nechasim and shubadim, right, at stake in this din Torah, so the rule is that ein nishbaim al karkos, and therefore ein nishbaim al kfiras shibud karkos. That's what the Gemara says. So Bali Tosis ask, and then others in their wake. But if you hold Shibud Daraisa means that even in a Milva Alpeh, right, there is the Shibud, we'll call these are Rabbeinu Tam's language, the Shibud Aguf, the personal commitment, the personal rather obligation triggers a Shibud Nechasa. Meaning, even a milva peder mishvad minat Torah, midrabanan hamishum pseidu de lekuchos or whatever you need kala, right? But minat Torah, there would be shibudim even in a milva peder. So the question is then, how do you ever have a shvua in any din Torah midaraisa? Because if you hold shibud daraisa, there's always karka at stake. That's the question. That's a famous. That's a you know a killer question. Meaning it's like this, it seems like it's a very, very solid question, and we know there has to be an answer because it's, you know, the evidence just, you know, doesn't fit with that conclusion. Now the word Bali tells us who gave answers, very technical answers. In Okanami, they said, and all the cases where there's a Shavua on Milva Alpeh Minat Torah, according to the Manam Shibud Daraisa, are cases where the guy doesn't own any property. It's all cases where he was mochel, that word again, mochel, I'm sorry, mochel and karka, and so on. There were, the Ramban, and then many, many centuries later, Chaim doesn't quote the Ramban, but the Ramban in Masachet Shavuos, in Parak Shavuos HaPikadon, and Chaim in two places, in Hilchos Ishus, and also in Hilchos Shavuos, came up with the same basic idea. Says there's a huge difference between Shibud Doraisa and Milva Alpeh and Shibudim that are the that result from a Milva Bishtar. Even Doraisa there's a difference between them. Roughly speaking, the difference is kind of what I was alluding to before. And that is that Shibud Doraisa there are Shibudim, but the Shibudim are kind of Arvus. They're down the road. We don't see them as quasi-Kinyanim. You don't say, oh, there's a milva, and that makes him a quasi-owner, you know, on the lien property. What we say is, there's a milva, he really has to pay him back $100. And if in the event he doesn't pay him back $100, there's a mechanism, you know, which will then kick in, you know, which will secure, you know, his financial interests. But that mechanism is down the road. It's not something that is even, you know, quasi-concrete here. But when there's a milva v'shtar, even if you hold shibud d'oraisa without the shtar, what that does is it makes the shibudim much more upfront. As you know, there's a debate between Abai and Rava in Sugim Psachim Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, whether or not Balkov Mikan Lava Hugova or Balkov Mapreya Hugova, which is very much relevant. It could be Michalik in both directions, but it's relevant. Meaning what? What happens in a situation? Let's say Chometz, for example. Let's say let's say the owner, or I forget about Chometz. It comes up with Chometz Vayira, but let's say the owner was Makdish or Makna away this field in the interim period, right? The point is, when there is a shibud that is collected, right, do we say that in retrospect it always belonged to the malva? Or do we say mikanu l'haba? We paskin mikanu l'haba, not l'mafrei. But still, do we look at it as if even before he has quasi kinyanim, right, or potential kinyanim, or do we say no, this is a mechanism which we may need later on, but in the present it has not yet any legal repercussions. So that is connected to the problem. Okay, what about a mashkon? A very parallel, similar question. So look at the next Mordechai. That's Tuf Reish Pei Aleph. Nishol Rabbeinu Meir. Everybody have it? In Mechilat Tzricha Kinyan, Heched Yesh Lemochel, Mashkin Biyado. Right? The Heshiv Nirali Dabar Pashad, who the Lobai Kinyan. B'nei Dibal Chov, Kona Mashkin, Li Iskayet, Kishomer Sachar, Mekomokom, Ein Gufo Koni, La Lemilva, Lemalva, sorry. Umahani Mechila, Apagav, Damalva Machsik Mashkon, Kid Amrinan, Parakama the Kedushin. The Ilav Evidiv Rigufa Kanui, Mahani, Ki Amale, the Api Trezil, Achanami, Ki Machale, Amalva, Hamashkon, Lamare, Kalechidisa Didei, Hava, Vishalom, Meir Brabaruch. Okay. So, this is a very fascinating. Okay. Oh, before. Sorry. Excuse me for. I omitted one thing that we did enough work on that I should mention. But so just bear with me for one more second before I get back to Mashkon. We were talking about Rabbi Yeshaya, right? And Milva Shiyesh Olel Shtar possibly being different. And the Bach's view that it's based on the idea that there are Nechasim Meshubadim, and therefore it isn't just a waiving of a right of collection because there's a concrete, you know, connected quasi-kinyan that goes with it, right? So remember the Mordechai, according to Ram Rothenberg, says, this is wrong. He doesn't quote Rabbi Yeshaya, but he says, even if there's a shtar, it doesn't make a difference. And he proved it from the din of Shmuel. What does Shmuel say? Again, Hamocher shtar chov l'chaveiro. Right? Shimon owes Ruvain $100. Ruvain sells the right of collection to Levi, the chazro machol, and then he says, forget it. You know, to Shimon, you don't have to pay. Levi cannot collect, right? Because there's no debt anymore. And then he says, Kol Shekain, says the Mordechai, if it's just between Reuven and Shimon, of course, Mechila ain't Tzrich Kinyan. Mechila, it works without a Kinyan even in that other case. So, the Ksos picked up on the Bach. So says, the Bach says that the reason Rabbeinu Yeshaya thinks that Milva B'Shtar, right, is going to be Mechila, but it's going to be Tzrich Kinyan, is because of the Mishubadim, right? So he says, oh, if that's the case, we can answer the problem from Shmuel. Because what happens in the case of Shmuel? At least according to Rabbeinu Tam. What really happens? Shimon owes Reuven $100, right? What does he owe him? What, at that point, what is there? There's a personal debt of $100. We call that the Shibud Aguf. And there's a Shibud Nechasim. there's the liened property, right, which covers the repayment of that debt. So there's a shibud aguf and there's a shibud nechasin. Correct? But remember what happened in this case. Reuven turned around and sold the shibud nechasin by selling the right to collect to Levi. So now when he's chozer machol, he's not encumbered. He doesn't have to get rid of his quasi-ownership in the shibud nechasin because he doesn't have that. So the Ksos says, if you hold, like Rabbeinu, if you accept the Bat's interpretation of Rabbeinu Yeshaya, it solves the Ram Rutenberg's Raya as well. Ram Rutenberg said, Kol Shekain, what do you need such a complicated case? There are complications, he sold it. Kol Shekain, if it's just between the two of them. Ksos says, no, the complications neutralize the reason why this is different. If you don't have the complications, right, then you have the problem. The complications here solve the problem. It's not a good paradigm for regular case. Okay. But in a very similar fashion, that's why it isn't an egregious, you know, detour. What about the exact parallel when you have a mashkon? In other words, Reuven lent money to Shimon. Instead of there being lien property, you know, which is accessible because of the brandishing of this shtar or ksavyad or whatever it's going to be, let's say Reuven is holding a mashkon, a pawn. Let's say Shimon, right, was forced to, on his own, did, might be a difference between what we call b'shasal vasa, shalom b'shasal vasa, but whatever. Let's say Reuven has a pawn of Shimon's to ensure the repayment of the loan. What happens then? So that's what the Ram Rutenberg, the next piece, l'shitaso, nishal Rabbeinu Meir, in b'chilat shvich ha-kinyan, heichad yesh l'moshkul mashkon b'yado. So what's fascinating is the way that he answered the question. He said, they should nearly pashut the low boy kinyan. Even then you'll say Mechila in Tzrifa kinyan. V'nei de bachov, I bachov's kona mashkan. That's a Gemara in Kiddushin and Gittin and Shavuos and Ksuvus. Bachov's kona, I mean the bachov, he has rights in the mashkan and he has responsibilities for the mashkan. Like, you know, if something happens, if it gets stolen, if it's earthquake, right? He's a shomer and he has certain kinyanim. So Tosa says, so the Rabbi Mordechai says, it's true that he is Kona Mashkin, but all we mean by that is Lizkayev Kishomer Sachar. That he's a shomer. Not that he's an owner. But either way, he may have rights in it. That doesn't mean that on some level, even partially, that he's an owner of the Gufa Davar. And then he points to the fact that the Gemara says in Kiddushin, can you be moch, like you asked me before, can an Eved Ivri, right, be terminated by Dibor Biyam? Why can't you say to the Eved Ivri, what do you need a shtar for? Or Kona Atzma, or whatever. Why not just say to him, Ape Trey, in front of two people, he's there, Ape Trey, Zil, go, leave. I don't need your service anymore. I don't want your service anymore. Or you did a great job. You know, it's my privilege, you know, to free you from your service. It can be nice also. So the Gemara says, well, that would work, except that Eved Ivri Gufo Kadri. Meaning the bonds that connect an Eved Ivri to his Adon, if they were just financial, then that would work. That's one of the Tosas's Rayas too, that Mechila ain't Sri Chakinyan. If it wasn't for the fact that Eved Ivri Gufo Kadri, you could say Zil Api Go, or Bapi Trey Zil. So what the Mordechai is saying here is, it's not like the Kona Mashkon is like the Kinyan Aguf of an Eved Ivri that you can't. But if you take the view that Mechila in Trei Chikin is about Shiurim, Shin Yud Vavresh, remnants, or Smichus Das, then it might be exactly like the Shtar. If you think that the charm of the Shtar is the Mishumadim, then it actually does depend how you look at Mashkon. And there's a huge debate. For example, the Mordechai here says that the mashkon is only treated like the pikadon obligation of a shomer sachar. But many rishonim think that it's like a shoah. It's much more serious. Or if you look at the itur, which you don't have in front of you, but which I'm just going to read to you as we conclude, and I just want to tell you one other thing about there's fascinating discussions of this in both the Sefer Itur, who disagrees with the Mordechai, and in the Ritva in Kiddushin on the Sugya of Eved Ivri, and Daf Tezva. Both of them think that a milva sheyesh alayo mashkon is like Eved Ivri Gufo Kanui. They accept the link But they totally argue about, is this like evidently gufa kani or engufa kani?
Well, what's the comparison to gufa kani? The loaf is gufa kani to the malva.
Say again?
That the loaf is gufa kani to
the malva. What do you mean the loaf is gufa kani?
Well, what do you mean gufa kani?
The mashkon.
By malva and the loaf, the gufa is not the mashkon, it's the loaf. The
Malveh is disguised to the Malveh. That's a Shibud. But when he gives the, we're trying to figure out the Mashkan which is sitting in the possession of the Malveh, what is his relationship to that Mashkan? How much is that just something he's holding on to and he has the right of holding it? That's what the Sivas, for example, talks about. Is that a Kenyan? Kenyan Lahachzik? Is it really a Kenyan in the object, a quasi Kenyan like Shibudim or not? So this is the language of the Itor. I'm sorry.
But is that Gufa Konwi? Is that
the Mashkon?
Like Habanibu is Gufa Konwi.
No, so you're saying it also means Kinyan Isur and so on. That's what you're saying. Yeah. But I understand. But the, that's more than Kinyan Mamo. The Itur, the Mordechai thinks it's not even a Kinyan, a real Kinyan Mamo. Right? It's more of a Pikado. This is the language of the Itur. Just give me one more minute. Mechila ein tricha Kinyan delo michsera meshicha. That's what I was referring to before. Okay, and then he goes on to say, "Umechila chain tricha kinyan dafka lemechila delay slay mashkon, avali slay mashkon mechila boy kinyan." Midgar sina bekidushin. It's always fascinating when the same proof is quoted by opponents, right? Midgar sina bekidushin gabi evan ivri shtar lamali. What do you need a shtar lemele be'api trei zil? Tell him say, tell him goodbye, right? Send him on his way verbally. Amarava zo someres even ivri gufa kanui varav shemachal grono in grono machal shvamina de ilav gufa kani mechilta grei dasahi the chiyamalei betrap is apetrei zil sagi aval hechad de gufa kanui right who gufo mashkon the even ivri, what does it mean even ivri gufa kani? It means he's like a mashkon to the adon velo mahani mechila kedamir the mechila lo mahani. Instead of the Mordechai who sees the Kiddushin as the paradigm for Mechila Ein Tzrich HaKinyan B'Mashkon, what the Eter did is turned everything on its head. He says, every Gufa Konui means he's like a Mashkon. So certainly a real Mashkon. He's not working with the Kinyan Isra. So the Ritva in Kiddushin has this discussion. And discusses the relationship between Eved Kanani and Eved Ivri. And among other things, seems to discuss what the relationship is. I'm not going to read it inside, it goes too late. But in Tezvav, he holds like the Itur. He discusses this question. What is the relationship between Mechila and Hefker? Hefker is also relinquishing something. But in Hefker, you don't relinquish a prerogative, right? You it's an object or subject, whatever it is, who is then not transferred, right? But hefker, relinquished in a way. The question is there something called Rishus Hefker? Or Zokhali Atzmo? What is Hefker? Right? What is the relationship between three things? Mechila, Hefker, and a third one, which the Machane Ephraim in the end of Hukoschia Behefker discusses, and that is what we call Siluk. Siluk. The classic case of Siluk is, that's also a very subtle difference, is something is going, not a prerogative or right that I have that I choose not to exercise or to relinquish. That's Mechila. Not Hefker, where I remove my ownership from something. Right? But I take steps in advance to preclude what otherwise would be an automatic an automatic kinyan or an automatic acquisition. For example, Yerusha. Right? Can I be misalek myself or some other benefit that is going to accrue to me at a later point in advance of it actually being triggered? I can be misalek atzmi mimen. So the Machane Ephraim discusses Hamocha lechavero simin yod aleph in Hukos Skiyo Mechila Hamocha lechavero ma shechayiv lo v'halova lo rotsa b'mechila. Is there such a thing as Mechila bal korcha or not? Can you force somebody to accept Mechila? So the Machon Ephraim says, Maudino, Ra'isi Shadavarza Machlokas Shanui, he thinks it depends on Tosis and Kiddush and Yuntes. And that question is about Tzchiyah Lekatan or Mechila Lekatan. So what about Mechila Lekatan? What about Mechila Balkorcha? Nearer the sphere of the Mechila Lo Haba Akna El Asiluk Bialma. He says, if Mechila is Siluk, then it could apply to a Katan. It could apply Balkorcha, because you are removing yourself from this. If it's a kind of Hakna'a, then you need a partner. You need a Gadol, and it has to be Baratzon. Possibly. Anyways, these are some of the issues are many more that are connected to the problem of Mechila Shrikhikinin. Next week I want to begin a little bit of Lo Sagur Mipnei Ish, but mostly the Gemara Daf Ches about Motzi Shemra, very fascinating topic as well.